Hello, everybody. You're listening to Prevention on Point. I'm Brian.
And I'm Tara. Welcome back. And we are lucky enough to have somebody in the studio with us again. One of our community partners here in Columbia and Greene counties, Claire Cousin, is here from the Columbia Greene Addiction Coalition, where she is the assistant director. So welcome, Claire. Thanks for joining us today.
Welcome, Claire. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I guess, you know, what we're really trying to do is to inform people in these two areas of all of our community providers that we have. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, and I know, and Brian knows, because we work in the human service fields. And mm-hmm. a lot of times people don't know these resources that are actually available and how much each community partner has to offer.
Right.
So if you could just give us a little history on yourself and your position at Columbia Greene Addiction Coalition.
Sure. So like you said, my name is Claire Cousin. I have lived in the Twin Counties for all of my life. I came to Columbia Greene Addiction Coalition about a year ago. I decided to apply for this job for a couple different reasons. One, I think coalition work is super important, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but also decided to take a career shift in what type of grassroots work I was doing. I have done social justice work in the community for well over 10 years and recently lost a friend to some of the symptoms of overdose, and decided that in that moment, I just didn't know a lot of the resources myself, and I didn't know how to be a helpful friend to her family and point them in the right direction, because we got to a really hopeless point in her addiction and felt like if we were all more knowledgeable or had more access to resources, maybe the outcome could have been different. Saw this job posted and decided that I'd give it a go. And not knowing much about the field, thought that some of my passion for nonprofit work and grassroots work could really add to the conversation and serve as a learning point. So that's how I came to CGAC. And since joining CGAC, I've been really reignited in some of the importance of coalition work and just seeing it in a different sector playing out, and how important it is to just bring all the resources to one central place and really try to disseminate the information to as many different groups of people still feels really integral to why I do the work that I do. So it feels good to work here.
Thanks for the transparency on that and mm-hmm. how it brought you to the current position that you hold. Because a lot of times people get so stuck, especially in human services, that with a population they work with or a certain cause they work with. And to look how interconnected all these things mm-hmm. are is really what you're saying. And for somebody who has 10 years of experience, that you are looking for information,
mm-hmm.
that says a lot
yeah.
to what needs to be done in
yeah.
these two communities and how much more work we need to do to let everybody know that's walking down the street the services that are available to them.
Yeah, and I think for community members that we want to engage, it's also important for them to see. I think it's important for community members to see people's faces in different arenas. Mm-hmm. I think that puts the humanistic aspect on the work that we're doing, and it really ties it back to folks like, oh, last time I saw you, you were doing some housing work, and now I can talk to you about this other issue that I have, and that sort of ties things together. And I think that's an important part that people should keep in mind when they're doing nonprofit work, is that you should be able to show up in multiple rooms, and people should recognize you, and that's a big piece of community building and capacity building and trust building. So I do think that that's an important part of the work too.
You're coming at this from real lived experience, like Tara said. Mm-hmm. You realized there was a gap in your own knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Tara, that's one of the reasons we talked about why we wanted to have the show, of course, is to be able to get out of our
bubble.
And
I think what's really important is, even when you are in human services
mm-hmm.
anywhere, not just these two counties, that people are continuing to grow and learn in their role, mm-hmm. whether it's changing roles as you did or adding on to your role,
mm-hmm.
that you continue to learn and grow as a service provider. What can you tell me about your work with, as you said, CGAC, which again, I'm going to say is the Columbia Greene Addiction Coalition. What is your role there, and what can you tell people about CGAC? Because I think there's probably a lot of listeners out there that have no idea what CGAC is. So can you tell us a little bit more about your role at CGAC, which again, I'm going to say is the Columbia Green Addiction Coalition. Is that a .net or a .org?
It's .org.
It's .org. .org. Yeah. So CGAC does have a website as well. What is your role there? And can you tell us what the coalition does? Because I think there's probably a lot of listeners out there, including human service providers mm-hmm. in these two counties, that don't know what CGAC's role is in our community.
Sure. So I'm new, but I'll give as much of a brief history as I can. CGAC started about 10 years ago off the backs of a task force that was created to address the opioid burden in Columbia and Greene counties. More recently, Greene County had been highlighted as number one in the state outside of New York City for opioid deaths. And because of that alarming rate, we applied for and were granted an OASIS grant to address the opioid burden in Greene County, which is the short-winded way of saying that is what my position is created to do. The assistant director, program coordinator, is to oversee things that are happening in Greene, and a lot of the grant is asking for capacity building and the connectedness that coalitions provide and really bringing the resources and the sectors together to get it into the community and lower the opioid burden. Opioid deaths have been going down, and I think that that is largely in part to the access of Narcan in the community. There's plenty of organizations in Columbia and Greene counties that are offering Narcan, and a lot of what we're doing in this role and in our roles as CGAC is just making sure that the community has access to where these locations are, who has these resources, where people can continue to access these resources, and really learning about like what the conversation is in this world right now around harm reduction, around prevention, around being proactive in addressing stigma, and really combating stigma at the same time. So a lot of what I was looking for is what I'm now helping to foster and bring to the community. It's good for me because I'm a hands-on learner. So getting into the trenches of the conversation and then having to disseminate the information as soon as I get it is good to keep in practice. But that is my role at CGAC, and CGAC has meetings and work groups. We're trying to move further away from just a meeting and have more work groups where people from the community get to engage with sector reps and stakeholders and really get to the work together. So,
you know, I think when you speak of these things, the word that I kept hearing other than stakeholders is community members. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a rarity when it comes to human services. A lot of mm-hmm. times community members receive services, but don't get to be a member and or have a voice in mm-hmm. what is happening with an organization. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe could use some clarification for people, because when people hear coalition, I think that people understand that that means a lot of people coming together to do the same work. Mm-hmm. But that is not what a coalition is.
Right.
I mean, that is the elementary school definition
right.
of a coalition. Right. So how do you see the coalition and how are you guys moving forward with your own definition of what, yeah. you know, CGAC as a coalition is?
Yeah, I think we're in a unique position compared to where a lot of the stakeholders that are members of our coalition are, because we have a little bit more free range, because we're not under an umbrella technically of another organization. We have our own mission and vision, and we are very community focused, and we're not direct service. So we are really a plug to a lot of the resources. We're really a hub of people that have access and knowledge that's trying to reshare that and also be a comfortable place for people to engage with what is available in the community. And I think that that is a benefit for us to be able to have some of that free range and be so grassroots that we can still connect to the community, and community sees us as individuals and not an entity, mm-hmm. and also have the respect of some of the stakeholders that have been there for the beginning, where we can continue to have those conversations in the rooms that we have access to and bring it back to a community level for stakeholders. So for me, a coalition is really just like a spectrum of opportunities to have the same conversation.
I like that, a spectrum of opportunities, because I think that's where people get confused about anybody's work is, you know, everybody wants to pigeonhole and, mm-hmm. and you know, put the square peg in the round hole.
Mm-hmm.
And in human services, that isn't always
right
the truth. I think something I was curious about that you just said is Greene County. You spoke a lot about Greene County.
Yes.
So your role is just you personally is Greene yes. County. Okay.
But the coalition is doing a lot of work across the counties.
Okay.
Thank
okay.
you for that.
Yeah.
So we are also in Columbia County doing a lot of the things. And they're two very different communities that are very much the same. And if you're not from the area, it's really hard to paint that picture to folks on the outside. But there are a lot of partnerships that exist on both sides of the river. So my role being in Greene, some of the limitations have been that we are just so entrenched in one foot in Columbia, one foot in Greene, that it sometimes it's a little hard to just pull out and do the work in Greene. But I am learning that Greene County has been doing a ton of things that you wouldn't necessarily expect because they are such a close-knit community. And I think that there is a lot of positive work being done in Greene County. There's a lot of louder work being done in Columbia County. There, when things happen in Columbia County, there's a lot more talk about it. There's a lot more of, you know, sharing what's happening. And in Greene, you sort of have to dig a little bit to find out what's been going on. And I think that's one of the major differences. But there's great things happening on both sides of the river. And one of the bigger visions of CGAC is to sort of pull all of that together and just like, we're on the bridge. We meet on the bridge and we figure it out for both sides of the river and make it make sense. And there's been some more cross-pollinating of ideas, I think, with CGAC being at the table of, you know, what's happening in Greene, what's worked in Greene, and how Columbia can sort of benefit from that, and what similarly what's happening in Columbia that Greene could maybe take some ideas from and share that. The only other point that I would make about the two is that when we're collecting data, which is something that's really integral to this position specifically in our org, a lot of the services are shared. So like the hospital is a shared service for Columbia and Greene, and you know, like Twin Counties is a shared service across Columbia and Greene. So there's more opportunities for the shared data and having to pick it apart, and that makes it a little nuanced, but it's been interesting to dig into that world also.
And when you say, just to clarify, when you say Twin Counties, you mean Twin County Recovery Services?
Yes.
So yeah, meaning treatment centers,
right,
and sober living.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I often think about that too. I have to agree with your statement that things seem louder
mm-hmm.
in Columbia County,
mm-hmm.
like how you put that, than they are in Greene County. And I personally always attribute it to that there's a city.
Yeah.
And I know Hudson, a lot of people, yeah, it is a city. It is a very small city, but mm-hmm. it is a city. And I think just having that availability of an urban area.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a notable
that,
city.
Absolutely. And not that Catskill I don't see as an urban area, because I do.
Mm-hmm.
When I travel between those two places, there's not too much of a difference in my mind.
Right.
But I agree with you on that. When it comes to the coalition and serving Columbia Greene counties, what is it that you guys are currently working on? What are some projects and or areas or even populations of humans that, you know, live in our two counties? Because we do have quite diverse communities. I personally would say more diverse in Columbia County
mm-hmm.
than in Greene County. But what are some programming or projects that the coalition is currently working on?
There's so many.
Great.
So right now we have a few different things going on. We have recurring work groups. The prevention work group is one that is where a lot of our work happens. We're talking about upcoming initiatives and we're getting community feedback on what we should be offering around prevention. We're gearing up for the school year. We are launching a Clear Mind Club after school program to talk about prevention and harm reduction and coping skills. So that will be happening in the fall. Location to be determined. We're working on a social norms campaign, which is really exciting. We also have a LGBTQ support group that happens throughout the month. and we offer free Narcan trainings and have medication safety supplies available to the community. We come into the schools, or we've shown up to libraries or places of work and offered community education presentations, workshops. We have guest speakers for schools available. And, you know, it really is just a matter of reaching out and letting us know what some of your needs are around this conversation. We love to partner with other organizations. We're not a one-stop shop. If there's somebody else in the game that can do it better than us, we will absolutely send you their way, which I think is one of the important parts of coalition work, is being able to pass the baton, share the workload, and expose people to other folks in the work that might have better information than we have. So,
as it is in all human services, I think that we all run into roadblocks. And what do you think has been the biggest roadblock coming into this coalition work with CGAC? And I'm on a lot of committees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily on a lot of coalitions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there is a large difference between those mm-hmm. two words. I'm going to ask you what the challenges are, and then I always ask all of our guests, if you had a magic wand and you could wish for something
mm-hmm.
to assist you in your role at Columbia Green Addiction Coalition or the coalition itself,
mm-hmm.
what would that be?
I think there's two things that show up as larger barriers. I don't think they're unworkable barriers. I think a reshaping around defining coalition work is necessary. I think if you could use the mind you had when you first applied to the position that you're in, and I think of most stakeholders when I make this statement, and that passion is still there, those are the folks that probably add the most to like meaningful coalition work. That level of passion and drive to make a difference. I think that people are really entrenched in their day, and they're in the Monday through Friday 9 to 5. They still care very deeply about their populations, but you know, you take meetings where you have room to take meetings, and you get as much done in the time that you have available to get done. And I think that for a coalition that is running these spaces, sometimes that can be a difficulty, but we do a good job at making sure that we try to create extra space. So within this meeting time that you've set aside, we'd like to make it as productive as possible, so that it doesn't feel like just another meeting, because we're aware that, you know, people are most of the time spending their work day at our coalition meetings, and our work is to provide these spaces. So we try to find a healthy balance there. And then the other piece is just, you know, it's scary for community members to sit in rooms and meetings with stakeholders. And I think finding the right recipe to knocking down the barriers there is really important. And I think a lot of that is around just understanding. And I think when you talk about the work that you do, there's a lot of jargon. And for the regular person that is living through the experience, taking down the jargon and making the room feel accessible, and if more people were comfortable that are stakeholders to share some of their lived experience, more folks could join the conversation. So, you know, I think it's on both sides of the spectrum, just getting people to the table and wanting to stay at the table from a stakeholder's perspective and a community perspective.
How has the community's response been to CGAC? And I think because I do have knowledge of coalition work and mm-hmm. and the realms that the coalition should be touching in our communities, how has the community outreach been? Because that, I think, is one of the hardest things mm-hmm. everyone is facing post-COVID.
Yeah.
Right? Ever since COVID has ended, in a sense, you know, you talk to different service providers, you talk to our school districts, you talk to our religious organizations. Everybody's getting difficulties, as you just said, mm-hmm. getting people to the table.
Mm-hmm.
People have learned to introvert and stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
How has that looked for the coalition, and what are you guys doing to build that community? Yeah.
I agree that I think COVID has done a number on isolationism. I think people are comfortable with doing what works for them, and getting through their day, even the tough parts. on their own. So we've done a lot of meeting people where they're at. And that is a big part of what we're continuing to do, especially in Green, where I'm still learning the landscape, where we're trying to be more accessible. We're trying to go the places that we're going. One example is we had a youth listening session earlier in the year, and we went to the Prattsville Arts Center. A lot of the kids from Catskill have never been there, and folks from Prattsville have probably never participated in this type of youth listening session. So we tried to make that a place where we can come together. It was super well attended, and people enjoyed it, and they want to do more of it. And we got to show the space in Prattsville that is amazing. There's been a lot of love and work put into that building, and that's one of our strategies, is just meeting people where they're at and utilizing spaces that exist in these communities that people already trust, and sort of bringing our message there. And also we still have the virtual options for most of our meetings, because we understand that there are people who want to participate, and there's plenty of barriers to not being able to get to a physical location. So
that's something Brian and I talk about almost every episode, mm-hmm. is meeting people where they're at, mm-hmm. and how important it is, whether it's around substance use, mm-hmm. or mental health, or whatever subject is important, mm-hmm. to you as a human being, that we have to meet people where we're at without judgment.
And we try to, because that's an expression that gets, of course, thrown around a lot, mm-hmm. in our work, and it's easy enough to say it, it's so hard to actually do it. Mm-hmm. We like to talk about, what does it look like to meet someone where they're at?
Right.
It's always different. And I like that you use this example of, from the footage that I saw of the listening session at the Prattsville, mm-hmm. Arts Center, it looked like you're actually bringing youth together by introducing them to each other.
Yes.
I'm thinking of when I was in high school, we had this thing called the Art Olympics. But as an art kid, you get to go to like a high school across town.
Right.
And meet other kids that are interested in the same things. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's one cool example of, yeah. actually providing something real.
And young people are a good place to practice that, because they're still very, even in their hesitation to meet new people, once they see other kids, it doesn't matter what they look like, it doesn't matter what they sound like, it doesn't matter what they're interested in, they always find a way to connect to each other, and they give us a lot of inspiration of how to do that, how to still see people as people before you know too much about them. So even at the listening session, the beginning of it, before we even started the panel discussion, there was a good 30 minutes where people were eating or walking around, and the kids were interacting with each other. They sort of, the adults were somewhere else in the room, and the kids were just meeting each other. And that created the environment that we had during the panel discussion. We used a fishbowl conversation style, which is, there's a smaller panel that's already on the stage, and then there's a reserve of young people sitting off the stage, and if they have anything to add to the onstage conversation, they get to tag team in and out with the panel. And it was so, they've created such a culture of comfort before that there were kids from the audience who were not even a part of the panel that decided to start tapping into the conversation, which was really empowering. But they set that tone themselves because they made it comfortable for themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so beautiful right there, is exactly that. You gave them the forum, mm-hmm. right? CGAC gave them the forum to do it.
Right.
And then they took over the power, yes. and control, which is really what meeting somebody at where they're at,
right.
is all about. I think that the work that everybody is doing around substance use disorder, as you know, we're all fighting stigma on a daily, mm-hmm. basis. We're fighting stigma within service agencies. We're fighting stigma within people diagnosed, mm-hmm. with substance use disorder.
I fight stigma all the time with in conversations with friends and family,
yep.
as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Where is CGAC's work around stigma at this point in time? Because I know, you know, again, it's one of those things that Brian and I bring up almost every single show, because it is a major factor. We talk about people who are looking for help and searching for help, just being able to pick up the phone, mm-hmm. or throw that text, or, mm-hmm. walk in a building and to be humble enough,
yeah.
to ask for help. And I don't think any of our work is done when it comes around, mm-hmm. stigma in these two counties. What do you have to share with us around that topic?
I think SeekX's addressing it in a few different ways. I think the biggest unspoken way is just through modeling. The way that we run our meetings, like I said, with the panel discussion, just like the way that we are offering and fostering spaces for people, we really don't need to be the namesake in the room, or we don't need to be the facilitator if we're hosting an event. Like, we're really passing things off to people who care and want to be a part of everything that we have going on. And I think that is that's one, exactly how you invite people into the room and combat stigma and show them that, you know, they're valued in these spaces around this conversation. And also, that is the crux of true coalition work, is being able to get out of the way and allow community to step up. Also, we're working on social norms campaigns. So in our media work group, we are actively getting going on a few. I think we have four coming up. So we have four teams that are working on different areas of addressing stigma. And we invite anybody to join some of these work groups. You can find this information on our website, seekact.org. And, you know, that those are some of the spaces that we are addressing stigma, because it is a huge part of the conversation. And I think creating the comfortability around saying the hard things out loud is how you combat stigma and find understanding.
And like you said, modeling by actually doing mm-hmm. people pay attention to other people's actions mm-hmm. and how they talk about things. Yeah.
We also try to make our social media and website really welcoming, because when you're talking about some of the heavier information, it's more digestible when it's in something that looks familiar, when you're looking at it and it doesn't seem like that's what you're about to be reading about. You know what I mean? I think our executive director does a really good job at our branding and making it very community oriented, friendly. Kids want to read it. Parents want to read it with their kids. They want to talk about what's on the website, using a lot of pictures and infographics. So we just try to keep it really light-hearted, but really get to the contents of the conversation.
Yeah, I have to commend you all on that. I'm thinking of your Instagram carousels and your Instagram slides that come up. They tend to be really punchy, colorful, mm-hmm. some cool balance of serious but also accessible.
Yeah.
Asking the real questions, mm-hmm. which I appreciate. Also talking straight up about how people use.
Yeah.
And sort of almost a matter of fact way
yep.
sometimes, which I think for me, that's a way to battle stigma.
That is. It's an honest, it's almost like with kids and curse words, right? Like, you're going to hear the curse words. And the more that you teach your kid that's the worst thing that could possibly come out of your mouth, the more enticing it is for them to either try it or steer completely far away from it. And then anybody who uses a curse word is the most awful kind of person. Yeah. If you're just talking about the thing, like, some people choose to say these words, and you can control your own reaction to hearing somebody else use these words and sort of not make it a personal attack on how you feel they should be saying their words, it does destigmatize curse words. And I think it's very similar in substance use disorder conversations and substance use conversations and prevention. When you take yourself out of it and you think about how these conversations are impacting the broader community, it makes it much easier to just participate in the conversation, because you're just saying what's true, and then you're offering resources. And if the resources are not something that you need, you can just scroll past it or share it for somebody who might need it.
I think that's really important. It's that transparent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that take what you need, leave mm-hmm. the rest for somebody else.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, you're listening to Prevention on Point on WGXC Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Brian.
And I'm Tara. And again, we want to thank Claire Cousin for coming in today from the Columbia Green Addiction Coalition to extend this conversation of what's happening here in our community and some wonderful resources that are available for people.
Yeah, there will be a second half to our conversation with Claire coming, and we hope you all tune in and give a shout. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach me at Brian, BRYANZ, at TwinCountyRecoveryServices.org, all one word.
And then I am available. It's Tara E, TARAE, at TwinCountyRecoveryServices.org. And we thank you all so much for listening and look forward to talking to you again soon.